This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
You ready?
Showtime.
On May 3rd, summer starts with the Fall Guy.
What are you doing later?
Let's drink a spicy margarita.
Make some bad decisions.
Yes!
Audiences are falling in love with the most entertaining film of the year.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy? Fall Guy.
That's what the poster said.
See Ryan Gosling and Emily Blunt in the movie critics say exists to make you happy.
Trying to make it out?
Nope.
Because I don't either. It's not what I'm into right now.
What are you into?
Talking.
Yeah.
The Fall Guy. Only in theaters May 3rd. Rated PG-13.
Whether the action is at the link or the bank, there's never an off day on Broad Street. It's the biggest news of the day, every day, with takes from someone who's never short on them. It's WIP Daily with Joe Giglio.
Welcome on in, WIP Daily, Joe Giglio with you. Appreciate everyone listening, subscribing, of course, following the podcast and our YouTube feed, 94WIP. Check it out there. Tucker Bagman will join me in a few minutes as we get set for, well, opening day. And it is opening day in Major League Baseball, but not here in Philadelphia. Rain, as I drove in with it this morning, is there. Phillies probably made the right call to postpone this thing. So tomorrow, Friday, the Phillies will have their opener against the Atlanta Braves. But it is baseball. Baseball's back. Got my Philly sweatshirt on. I'm ready to go. Yesterday, I threw out 24 bold predictions for the Phillies. And one of those was that the Phillies were going to win 95 games and win the National League East. And if they're going to reach that ceiling, if they're going to get to that point, well, there's certain X factors that have to go their way or go the other way. And then that will obviously change the way the season goes. But I was thinking about that this morning, X factors, that like the things, the hinge points of this team, the pressure points of this team that will make it go one way or the other. Look, I think the Phillies have a pretty high floor to where as long as their top two pitchers stay healthy, they're going to be a good team, and they're going to be certainly a playoff caliber team. Now, I do think the National League this year, a little bit better, the underbelly. So, you know, are the Phillies a stone cold lock to make the playoffs? I don't know. Probably not. I think they have a very, very good chance. I would put it above 50%, probably 65% to make the playoffs. But that's not it. Like, the goal is to win the World Series, to be a team that can win in the mid-90s and be a team that, you know, really is excellent the way they have been from June on the last year. So how do they get there? I've got five X factors that will determine the Philly season, what they are, how great they could be. Number one, is Trey Turner still great? You know, we had a discussion on the Midday Show a couple days ago about Trey Turner and whether or not you expect him to be an MVP caliber player. And the spirit of that conversation was really more like top five MVP kind of player, top 10 votes. You know, a guy that's a legitimate MVP candidates. I know guys get down ballot MVP votes. If you're like the 10th guy on a ballot, on one of the ballots, maybe you get a point. You know what I mean? But you know what I'm saying when I say this, a legitimate MVP candidate. He wasn't last year. He's had years in his career where he has. And you go to Trey Turner's season last year, and we spent so much time on it on this podcast and on WIP on the air. It was a tale of two different, totally different seasons. The first 4 months, Trey Turner was bad. I mean, he was Freddie Galvis to the plate while leading baseball in errors. I mean, the guy was atrocious. I mean, that's why they dropped him to eighth in the order. It's why we had conversation about benching him. It's why I said if I had a magic wand and undo the contract in June, because it just looked like this was going to be a disaster. Then August arrived, the ovations happened, and Trey Turner got not red hot, but white hot for 2 months. He finished with respectable numbers, especially considering what he had done to start his Phillies career. Got off to a crazy good start in the playoffs. And then he and the rest of the team kind of sputtered out at the end. And if you look at Trey Turner, you say, well, that's the guy. August, September, he got comfortable, the ovation. Then boom, that's a great player. If you look at the guy in the beginning or the totality of the season, you say, that's not a great player anymore. That is a good baseball player. It's a productive player, one of the more productive shortstops, but that's not a great player. 26 errors, an OPS that was in the 770s that fell for the fourth straight season. Is Trey Turner still a great player? I think that dictates a lot of how great the Phillies are and how much the more help they'll need maybe when we get to the trade deadline, to go win the World Series. Number two, in terms of X factors, is there another level to the young Phillies? I don't mean the rookies. I don't mean Orion Kerkering. I don't mean, I'll include Johan Rojas. I don't mean those guys. I mean that next wave, not the star level, the next guy. So we know there's the Schwarbers and there's the Harpers and there's the Turners and the Wheelers and the Nolas. They're paid to be stars, Castellanos. But the next guys, Ranger Suarez, Bryson Stott, Alec Bohm, Brandon Marsh, they're all good. They've all established themselves as legitimate major league starters at their positions. Is there another level, though? Is there an all-star level to those guys? Of all of them, I think Ranger does have that in him. We've seen it at times. Ranger Suarez reminds me of the old Yankee and White Sox, Orlando Hernandez, El Duque. You could throw him in any scenario and he could succeed. Out of the bullpen, closing a playoff game, obviously, as he did against the Padres in the NLCS, starting, whatever. He's good. But can Ranger harness it to be excellent? You know, we've seen stretches 6, 8, 10 weeks where he's amazing. And then he'll have a bad start or his back will flare up and it's like, yeah, he's good. But it doesn't stay to that level. Can Ranger do that? Could he go to all-star level? Alec Bohm, he's steadily gotten better from a below-average offensive player to an average offensive player to a slightly above-average offensive player. Is there another level? Is there a 30-home-run season? Or is this what he is? Brandon Marsh, steadily getting better. Can he take another jump, especially with the plate discipline on base percentage? And Bryson Stott, of all the offensive guys I just mentioned, he's the one I have the most confidence in. If he can unlock a little bit more plate discipline, walk to go along with his 280 to 300 average, I think a little more power is natural going to come. You know, he goes from the 14 to 15 range, you know, 13 to 16 range in home runs to maybe 20. That's an all-star level second baseman. Can those guys get to another level? Third X factor for this season. Can the bullpen live up to the hype? You know, for all of us who sat through, and I remember sitting through there on the old evening show doing leading off and final out, the Phillies bullpen in 2020 and 2021. For those of us who sat through those games, who sat there, and Tucker will join me in a few minutes, we used to look at the live lines on the betting market when the Phillies would have a lead in the sixth or seventh or eighth inning and their bullpen would come out, because you could watch it in real time flip from their favorite to win this game. They obviously should win the game they're winning, to they're going to lose the game. That's how bad their bullpen was then to where we are now. MLB.com just a couple days ago projected the Phillies as the best and most valuable bullpen in baseball. Now they have those kind of arms, but will they live up to the hype? Will they be as good, some of them, as they were last year? Like Jeff Hoffman, can he repeat that and build moving forward in his career off of that kind of out of nowhere season? Or is that a one hit wonder kind of thing? We're going to find out. Jose Alvarado, health permitting, I think has now established himself the last year and a half plus. He's really good. He's figured out where he is in his career. He's dominant. Gregory Soto, everyone tells me about the stuff, but I still see an ERA that's way too high and way too many blowups. I really like Orion Kerkering. I think he's going to help a lot when he gets here. He's got to get here, you know, hopefully just a week or two behind because he had the flu. Matt Strom, I was skeptical when they signed him. He was really good last year. Now they gave him a contract extension. There's a lot of depth here, but they did lose Craig Kimbrell, who for as bad as he was in the playoffs, was a pretty steady guy from, you know, let's say mid-May to mid-August. Craig Kimbrell locked down a lot of games. So there's a projection that's going to be a really good bullpen. I see why, but they got to do it. I mean, go to Sir Anthony Dominguez, who 2 years ago, man, he was amazing. And last year, he really wasn't. And I don't know what Sir Anthony they're going to get. And the other thing to look out for is, where is the help coming from? Last year, the bullpen went to a different level because Jeff Hoffman arrived. And he's here now. So who's going to be this year's Jeff Hoffman? Could be Griff McGarry, who they're making into a reliever in the minors, a guy that was a high pick to be a starter. It really hasn't worked, but the stuff is there. Michael Mercado's a name they traded for from the Rays this spring. Topper said he's a guy. And when baseball parlance, when someone says he's a guy, that means he's a big league or he could play. Mercado's an interesting name with good stuff. And then, you know, it could come from the trade market. I mean, the Phillies could have to go get a relief pitcher, but I see the bones of a really good bullpen. I also see some guys other than Alvarado. It's like, you know, what's there? Like, are we sure about all these guys? Can they live up to the hype?
Get ready for the greatest roast of all time. The Roast of Tom Brady. A Netflix live event happening May 5th. Hosted by Kevin Hart. The seven-time world champion gets his cleats held to the fire by famous friends and frenemies on an unforgettable night where everything is fair game. Tune in on May 5th at 5 p.m. Pacific time for The Roast of Tom Brady. Live only on Netflix.
Number four, will the Phillies finally do the opposite of what they usually do, or at least have done the last couple of years, and actually get off to a hot start? If you look at the Phillies schedule, and I'll pull it up right now, and I've talked a lot about this because I think it's critical that they get off to a really good start. Unlike the last 2 years where the schedule kind of favored the Phillies to get hot in the middle of the summer, and you kind of could look out and say, all right, as long as they don't totally bury themselves, they could figure this out in June. This is not that kind of schedule. In fact, I believe the easiest part of their schedule is in April. So any designs on a big season, any designs on getting off to a good start, sustaining the division, 95 wins, it really means they got to get off to a good start in April. Here's the schedule. We know Atlanta's in town right now. They'll play them for three. That's obviously really challenging. The Braves, in some people's eyes, are the best team in baseball. But after that, Cincinnati. And Cincinnati has a couple pitchers down to start the season and some injuries to some of their young players. I think they're kind of on the rise, but they might be a way better team in September and August than they are in April. So it's Cincinnati at home. Washington, St. Louis. I think Washington's terrible. St. Louis, I don't think they're a playoff team. Pittsburgh, Colorado, the White Sox at home. You're not going to find much easier of a homestand than that ever. I mean, you're talking about Pittsburgh, who maybe they get a little bit better and they push for 500. Colorado's awful. The White Sox are awful. And they go to Cincinnati. They go to San Diego. They go to the Angels. They got to win a lot of those games. I mean, the Phillies need to be – I'll just put it out there. They need to be about 10 games over 500 at the end of April if they're serious about winning this division. Quickly, to the other side of this, August, right? Let's say the Phillies will get off to a good start. Well, they're going to need that buffer. August, here's the schedule. Three at Seattle, who I think are going to be a playoff team and a very dangerous team. Three at the Dodgers. Three at Arizona. That's a 10-game trip to start four at Arizona. 10-game trip to start August. Home for Miami and Washington. All right, that's a little softer underbelly. But then at Atlanta, at Kansas City, and they end it August with seven games at home against Houston and Atlanta. I mean, that's brutal. Other than Kansas City and Washington and Miami, it's all playoff teams, and a lot of them on the road. That is a brutal August. So it's critical, and I think it could change the whole flow of the season. If the Phillies get off to a good start, perhaps, and this leads to my last one, they are more willing at the trade deadline to push further in. You know, they keep talking about leaving the powder dry. Well, I hope they mean it, because Jordan Montgomery was just signed for $25 million. Phillies didn't want to go that third level of luxury tax. In the last 2 years, they've made decent moves at the deadline. It's helped them. Brandon Marsh, Kyle Gibson, Michael Lorenzen. But there were bigger moves out there the last couple of years. The Phillies avoided Carlos Rodon 2 years ago. Last year, whether it be a push for Paul Goldschmidt or an outfield or whatever it is, they kind of piecemeal things together the last two trade deadlines. If they get off to a hot start and they're in the division race and they feel like this is the year to go win the World Series, I hope and I think it's a big X factor. Are they willing to push with prospects and money to add the missing piece? Tucker, there's a lot of interesting X factors with this team. What's hitting you the most as we get ready for opening day tomorrow?
Yeah, it's something, my biggest thing, and it might be more of a bigger takeaway, but they just need to stay healthy, which is something that a lot of these guys have done. But you kind of look at this roster, and it's getting older, and you look at some of the key players on this team. I mean, Zach Wheeler has dealt with, you know, some issues the last couple of years. Aaron Nola, who has been unbelievably, you know, durable in his time as a Philly, it's also getting a little older, right? And at what point does that durability become less of an asset and more of a, hey, he's got a lot of miles on his arm? And then I look at someone like Kyle Schwarber, who he's going to play DH every day, so that's going to hopefully save his knees. But that's another guy who's dealing with, you know, kind of a lingering long-term issue. Bryce Harper's back is something that, you know, I might worry about down the line. JT Realmuto is a catcher in his 30s, who has caught 130 games each of the last 3 years. And all these things add up. And, you know, I wonder if this team has the depth to deal with a big injury or two to some of their higher priced players. If Zach Wheeler goes down, obviously you have Aaron Nola who can take over the top of the rotation, but with Taiwan Walker still down, and we're not necessarily high on Taiwan Walker, but that's one less major league starting pitcher you have, right? And then all of a sudden the back end of your rotation is Sanchez, Turnbull, and McAble, or maybe bullpen games, and you're really rolling out with two guys who you feel comfortable starting every fifth day in Suarez and Nola. Or if Nola misses time, same thing with Wheeler and Suarez. And Suarez is a guy who has missed time and has dealt with injury issues. I think that's part of the reason why he's one of the more underrated pitchers in baseball. It is based on the fact that he hasn't really been durable, but he has shown up in the playoffs. I look at this team right now, and part of my optimism for them being great over 162 is they do have guys like Bryce Harper who will be healthy on opening day. They do have Ranger Suarez coming off, you know, his first real spring training in quite a while. But I just think there are a lot of question marks about this team and its depth moving forward, that come mid-June, come mid-July, if they're missing a piece or two, they could be really struggling to stay afloat.
Well, and then that doesn't even factor in if they need something that's just not effective, like Johan Rojas. If he doesn't hit and they have to go get an outfielder, well, then you got to prioritize, do I go and fix the rotation because I have an injury, or do I fix center field? So that's all part of it. One other thing to note, and that's a good one to add in with Tucker, with the health, just overall health. And I mentioned a few minutes ago, the underbelly of the National League got better. Last year, the last two teams in the playoffs, now I know Arizona went to the World Series, unfortunately, beat the Phillies, but just to get in, that bar was really low. It was like 83, 84 wins to get in the postseason. I think that bar is way higher this year. So if the Phillies have injuries, you know, like just saying, ah, whatever, they'll win 85, 86, 87, they'll get in. I think it's going to be a more challenging year for the National League wildcard teams to get in. It's why I've talked about the division a lot. I think it's just, you're in. You don't have to worry about anything. But look, the Padres probably are better, even though they lost Soto, because they had such a weird year last year. They're probably a little bit better than they were. The Giants got way better on paper than they were a year ago. The Reds could take a jump. The Cubs added Craig Counsell. I mean, a lot of these teams have really pushed. The Diamondbacks went to the World Series, and now they added Jordan Montgomery and Eduardo Rodriguez. I mean, they added some real pieces to a team that was already there. So I think the underbelly of the NL, a little bit more challenging. I could see a scenario where every NL playoff team this year has 88 wins, 89 wins. In the last 2 years, as the Phillies have gone on their runs, that hasn't been the case. It was 87 wins with the Phillies 2 years ago, and last year they got to smack around a Marlins team that didn't belong in the playoffs. They just got there because nobody was decent last year in the NL. This year, a little more challenging. A lot of X factors, so much to watch as the Phillies get ready for the start of their season, opening day on Friday. We'll talk soon on WIP Daily.